Welcome to Robert Bellissimo at the Movies. This is a YouTube video podcast exploring storytelling on film, as well as interviews with industry professionals who work in film, television, theater, among other areas of the arts. I want to welcome to the show Burke Kearns, who is an award-winning television and motion picture director, producer, writer, journalist, and author. He is also the author of the 1999 television memoir and expose, Tabloid Baby, and The Show Won't Go On, the most shocking, bizarre, and historic deaths of performers on stage. The acclaimed book he wrote with Jeff Abraham was published in September 2019 by Chicago Review Press. And today we're talking about his latest book, which I have here, which is so, so good. Lawrence Tierney, Hollywood's Real Life Tough Guy, which just came out. Bert, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. And I just received the hardcover yesterday.
So oh, fantastic.
Ready to go. Nice looking book.
What a read. It's such a roller coaster ride. And I know that you expressed this with other people who have interviewed you that, you know, and I had a similar experience because you start reading it and things are suddenly looking good. And then boom, he gets arrested again. Things are looking good. He gets arrested again. It's such an up and down. It's a real emotional book in a lot of ways, but also a lot of it, I couldn't help but laugh. I mean, I was felt guilty sometimes because I know it's not always so funny, but some of these stories are so, so wild. So I absolutely loved it. Well, well done.
Thank you. Yes, it's much wilder than anything that someone could write in a screenplay. You know, for people who aren't familiar, if you're not familiar with Lawrence Tierney, he was an actor, a handsome Irish American out of Brooklyn, New York, who came to Hollywood in 1943. He became an overnight sensation in 1945, playing the gangster John Dillinger in the film Dillinger. And then over about the next 7 years, he proceeded to fight and brawl and drink his way out of a career, or so it seemed. He managed to continue mixing movies, fights, drunken scenes, more movies later, some television appearances throughout the next couple of decades until in the 1980s, he made an incredible comeback really as an entirely different actor, an old craggy, bald-headed guy who with a gravelly voice and a little bit crazy. And he was on every television drama of the 1980s. And then he was rediscovered by Quentin Tarantino in the film Reservoir Dogs. Most people will remember him as Joe Cabot in Reservoir Dogs, or as Elaine's father in Seinfeld. He did a famous episode in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Almost had a recurring role, but he blew that one as well.
Oh, that's another great story. There's so many. I'm sure we could share a few. I just wanted to ask off the top, because I know that you accidentally came across the newspaper article about all these arrests, that he had been arrested, you know, 13 times or so when you were researching another book, and then you started researching the book from there. But what is it that makes you say, okay, I'm gonna go all the way and write a book on Lawrence Tierney? What gives you the go ahead for something like that?
First of all, we both entered Hollywood through the same door, literally, on Gower Street. I think it was 825 Gower Street. That building was the entrance to RKO Radio Pictures when Tierney first was hired as a contract player. That building remains and was the entrance to Paramount Pictures when I arrived there in 1990, working for a television show on the Paramount lot, which had incorporated the old RKO Studios lot. I also drank with Tierney one night in about 1992, shortly after Reservoir Dogs came out. There are a lot of bars and restaurants in Hollywood that were big in the 1940s, are still around today. And now, you know, in the 1990s, when I went there in the early 90s, a place called the Formosa Cafe, an old Cantonese restaurant where Ava Gardner used to have a booth and Elvis used to be there and Bogart. And now you would go there and you'd see these old guys at the bar, but then over there in a booth is Tim Burton or Keanu Reeves. And so it was a mix of the old and new Hollywood. I was sitting at the bar by myself one night. I look over and there's an old guy with short sleeves, drinking a whiskey. And I said, I recognize that. That's the guy from Reservoir Dogs. And he turned around. He said, hey, how you doing? I'm Larry. Nice to meet you. And shook hands. And I don't remember what we talked about. I know we had some drinks. We had some laughs. Lindy, the old bartender, and there were no fights and no brawls. That was the thing I didn't remember. So I had that little personal connection to it. But it was when I found that story that said Lawrence Tierney arrested for the 13th time that I looked into it and saw that it wasn't the 13th time. It was like the 22nd time. And I said, this is a very interesting story. And I started the research. The pandemic hit, the lockdown hit. I had a lot of time to sit and just research stories and look up everything I could about Lawrence Tierney. And I was surprised really every step of the way. It was really an untold story of the underside of Hollywood and the dark side of fame, really.
Absolutely. I actually remember an acting teacher of mine years ago told me that he met him as well. So I emailed him the other day. I said, did you once tell me that you knew Lawrence Tierney? And he was the manager of the movie theater inside at Carnegie Hall. And apparently Tierney came in all the time and even coached him on some auditions. And he said he was one of the nicest guys, you know, which is interesting because, as you said, you know, you point out in the book, he could be really charming and sweet and nice, but if he was drinking, it just was, you know, it was another story, unfortunately.
Yeah, which... the sad part about that was through the 50s, you know, when he drank, when he got in fights, he obviously had mental issues, he had family issues, he was an alcoholic. And he would admit, he would say, I'm an alcoholic. I've tried AA and it doesn't work. It's really got the better of me. But the media, the gossips at the time, whether he was in the movies or not, loved him as a regular in the columns. And it was always Dillinger acting up again, you know, Lawrence Tierney trying to play that mean character that he plays in the films. And right. They let him down. The medical establishment really let him down. And the justice system let him down through the 50s. There are so many stories where Tierney is hauled in before a judge. He's still sleeping off whatever drunken fight he got in the night before. And the judge looks at his record and says, Mr. Tierney, this is the fourth time you've been brought before me. The same thing over and over again. It is time for you to go to jail. But if you promise never to drink again, I'll let you off on probation. How's that? Your Honor, I promise I'll never drink. That happened on that 13th arrest.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he goes off and he might white knuckle it. He might white knuckle it for a few months and then he falls again. So it was that story. What also made it great, I don't mean to go on, what made it different than the usual, you know, rags to riches, Hollywood, Babylon in the gutter story was that Tierney was an incredibly talented actor. He was really good. He didn't really get a chance to flex his acting muscles in the movies because he was typecast as the bad guy, you know, the film noir bad guy, because there was nobody colder and meaner than Tierney. But he was also very funny. And that was another thing too. He got to show that in the 80s on television, how funny he was.
Yes, absolutely. Even in Reservoir Dogs, he's hilarious. And I'm not the biggest Tarantino fan. I do like Reservoir Dogs. But he does have dialogue that just stays with you. And I can remember so many of the lines, and you can hear Tierney's voice just doing, you know, when he gives everyone the colors, you're Mr. Pink, you're Mr. Blonde. I mean, it's just so good. I mean, he played that part so well. Was there any indication to how he responded to hearing all these stories in the press? Did that drive him crazy that he was always in the press? I don't know if anything, you found anything about how he reacted to all this.
Well, it came to a point where it seemed he started playing the role a bit. He kind of realized, you know, he realized that it didn't matter if he stopped drinking. He'd go into, for some reason, he would continue to go into nightclubs, even though he wasn't, you know, he'd always be shown drinking a milk in a nightclub whatever. But it got to the point where he'd go to the club and say, I'm not drinking. I'm sorry, we can't let you into the club. You're going to cause trouble. But I'm not drinking. And then he'd be like, it doesn't matter anymore. Nobody believes me when I'm not drinking. So I might as well just drink again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got to the point where he fell pretty precipitously. He was homeless for a while, living on the streets of New York. You know, he had to escape to Europe. He went to Europe for about 7 years and wound up coming back, you know, worked construction. I think one reason why he showed up at Carnegie Hall a lot was that he was driving a handsome carriage. He was a horse and buggy driver in Central Park. So he
That's right.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But he always managed to keep going. He always managed to keep himself afloat. And there was always somebody willing to get him, give him a job. That was another thing in the book where it's this, you mentioned to me, I think in an email that it was, or in a post that it was a roller coaster ride. You'd get to the point where Lawrence Tierney is, you know, in a fight with cops. He's beaten to a pulp. He's in front of the cameras, bloodied and beaten, and he's hogtied. And that's the end of Lawrence Tierney, except guess what? He gets another role the next week.
Because
people liked him. He was a nice guy.
Well, that's what's so incredible about the story is that it's tragic on the one sense, but there's something so inspiring about it because you think, how did this guy survive? How did he keep working, not just as an actor, but like all the different jobs that you mentioned, construction, hansom cab driver. How did he even survive some of these hits to the head? I mean, some of the photos you have here in the back of the book where he's, you know, he's a bloody mess after getting, I'll just share this one, after getting hit with the billy clubs. I mean, my God, I mean, it is quite impressive that he was able to reinvent himself and survive and keep working. And it is really an incredible story. I don't see it as totally tragic. I don't know how you feel about him in general, but I think there is a lot that's inspiring up to it.
Well, that's one thing I say. It's a tragic story, but in some ways it's really heroic.
For sure.
Because he managed to do that. And when you look at it, it's a career that spanned 7 decades. I think I said it was 69 films, more than 30 television appearances, and more than 75 arrests. I mean, but it did last into the 21st century, beginning in the 1940s. And the other thing, you know, he died in 2002. But what makes this really a current story is that when he came back to Hollywood and kind of restarted his career in around 1985, he started going back to those bars. And one of the bars is a place called Bordner's. It's an old bar right off Hollywood Boulevard, right down the road from the Chinese Theater. And that's where he ran into a guy named Jeff Burr, a guy named C. Courtney Joyner, a guy named Will Houston. Jeff Burr is a director. C. Courtney Joyner is a screenwriter and a writer. Will Houston is an actor. They were all getting started then. And they recognized Lawrence Tierney. Look, that's Lawrence Tierney. Get him over. And next thing you know, Lawrence Tierney is at their table. Next thing you know, they're in his apartment. Next thing you know, he's sleeping on their couch. And all these youngsters, he hung out with the youngsters because most of his contemporaries were grown up. They'd either, you know, put that life aside and got married and had kids or whatever. So he was hanging out with the youngsters, and he was old Larry, the old crazy guy, and telling them great stories. And so you've got guys today, Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, the great screenwriters and producers. They did Ed Wood, the People versus O.J. Simpson series. They did Man on the Moon and et cetera. When they were first starting writing their first scripts, Lawrence Tierney was the next door neighbor to Larry Karaszewski, and he would burst in on their screenwriting sessions and perform for them. And so these guys were influenced by Lawrence Tierney. One of the problems I had in the book was that so many people were getting in touch with me with their Lawrence Tierney stories. Everybody run into the guy and had a great, memorable time with him, which made the book a lot more fun.
Oh, no, absolutely. One thing I was curious about was, you know, because you mentioned that some of the plays he got cast in, he would get fired from, like Sanford Meisner, the great acting teacher, thought he was drunk at a rehearsal and he was fired. But he seemed to manage to never get fired on film and television. And I mean, I could be wrong, but when I'm reading this book, it's like, how did he manage to not drink? Or could he just handle it better when he was on a film or television show? I don't know if you had any ideas about that or was there any evidence about how he managed to not get fired?
there were, I basically did a week by week, you know, chronological, you know, research of his life and career, everything that was printed about him and everything that, you know, in public records, et cetera. And there were times when he went up to a year without drinking, really.
Right.
He'd go months without drinking. You know, he would white knuckle it. He relied on prayer. He relied on whatever he could to not drink, so that he was able to handle it. He caused some trouble while he was working, but he claimed that he never drank while he was making a film. I think the Broadway, you know, he wanted to go on Broadway. He had two or three chances, blew them all. And I think part of that had to do with the discipline it would take to show up every day, you know, 6 days a week, twice on Wednesdays and do these shows. He performed in a lot of plays in what they call the straw hat circuit, I guess, summer stock outside of New York. He did Brando's role in A Streetcar Named Desire. He went crazy. He did Humphrey Bogart's role in The Petrified Forest. Tracy's role in the last, and all of these, the reviews that you saw out of town, they were like, this guy is great. I mean, he is really a really good actor. So he could have done any of that.
Yes. No, I don't doubt it at all. Did you know, you talked about some of the training he had as an actor, but was there anything that was there any proof about it, how he approached acting, or was he from was he Stanislavski trained? Was he method actor, or how did he have a system? I don't know if anyone found anything out about that.
No, he was one of just these naturalistic actors. He looked good. He was a model in the Sears catalogs, and he was a lifeguard when he was first discovered. But he worked with the Blackfriars Theater, an Irish theater group, very naturalistic group out of that was just off Broadway. He worked with them a bit. He worked with the New Rochelle Players, which is sort of an amateur group, and just got into Hollywood. And he sort of relied on his. You can see when in these films, the way he approaches them is that he's just sort of himself, this big scary guy, being as scary as he possibly could.
Yeah, I mean, he was. When you go look at his films from the 40s, I mean, he was always so realistic. Whereas, you know, sometimes in the classic Hollywood period, sometimes the acting could be a little broader than perhaps it became in the 50s and 60s. But he was always so natural. So I couldn't help but wonder, was he from the method training or something? But I guess he just learned on the job. I mean, he must have been just so instinctive. That he could just be so relaxed on the camera, because it really is spectacular to see him when he was young. And I couldn't help but wonder he did say, well, you know, they're always cast me as the tough guys. Did that bother him? Did he hope to be more like Cagney and not get typecast into the gangster tough guy parts? Or did he just take whatever came?
He always said, I take whatever comes. I act in what they cast me in.
Yeah.
But from the beginning, he resented it. His character of Steve Morgan in the movie Born to Kill, which is, you know, again, one of the most coldest, evil impersonations of a cold-hearted killer, and it's probably his most effective role. He hated that. He said, I hate the character. Right. It's not me. I'm funny. I want to play other roles, but they won't let me. And I don't want people to think that I'm him. Well, people thought that it was him.
Yeah, right.
People would approach him. I mean, that was one of his issues was that he would, again, spend a lot of time in bars, a lot of time in nightclubs, and he'd be at a bar and someone would come up to him and say, "Hey, Dillinger, you're not so tough, are you?"
Right.
Pop, and he punched the guy. And it was used to a lot of, they called them one punchers in those days, because that's all it took from Tierney. A guy would wise off, pop him in the nose. Every once in a while, he'd pick a fight or be in a fight with the wrong guy, a former middleweight collegiate boxing champion, and then he'd get his head handed to him.
You know, I was watching, and I know you've seen it, the interview in the mid-80s with Skippy Lowe, which you could find on YouTube. And I knew he was a big guy, but man, he was enormous. He was sitting beside that, I can't remember the female actor he was beside there. And just the contrast between the two of them, he was enormous. I mean, his fists, oh my God. I mean, I would not have wanted to have gone into a fight with that guy.
No, I mean, Michael Madsen, the actor who was in Reservoir Dogs, who's really one of the successors to Tierney as far as tough guy actors go. You know, Tierney threw a punch or two at him once, and he said, you know, with those, he just missed my chin. He said, and with that bad hand, it would have hurt.
Oh God. I was laughing out loud at the story where he was trying to give his lawn furniture away to Chris Penn and then tried to give it to Michael Madsen. And then, and then brought it back to Chris Penn. Oh my God. I was at a coffee shop the other day and I was read on that chapter and I was laughing out loud. I had to hide my laughter, not to bother anyone. I even had some looks from people when they saw this mug on the cover, sort of like, who the hell is that? I couldn't help, I just, my reading of how they looked at the cover of this book. Is there any favorite Tierney films of yours? Which ones do you like the best?
Well, my favorites are The Devil Thumbs a Ride, which I just found yesterday from Eddie Muller, the noir czar, the film noir expert,
right,
that it's not released in this country because Warner Brothers doesn't own the underlying literary rights to the film. So after all these years, they're not showing it here. I got a DVD on eBay from England, actually, so I guess I can't show it here. The Devil Thumbs a Ride is great. And there's a film that he made early in his career before Dillinger called The Ghost Ship. It's a supporting role. He's not even mentioned in the credits, but in it, he plays a ship hand on this boat where the captain's going crazy. And he's funny. He's great. He really stands out. He has an unbelievable death scene that you can find on YouTube where he's crushed.
Oh, is that where the chains? Where he gets buried in chains? Yeah.
Yeah. He's great in that.
Yeah.
But then also, I think some of his best work was done on television in the 1980s. He had the last words in the final episode of Hill Street Blues.
Right.
He had a recurring role on that in the last two seasons. That's an honor, you know, one of the most definitive series of the 1980s. And here he gets the last words in it. And that was an honor for the people who made that. There's an old show called Tales from the Dark Side. He plays an exorcist with Phyllis Diller as his wife. And it's a comedy and it's hilarious. So there's a lot of good Lawrence Tierney out there.
Did you, I imagine you, did you want to, while you're doing the book, did you want to see everything he was in? Were you able to get everything he was in? Was that something you tried to do?
Yes, for the most part, I did. You know, I'm not a film, I love movies. I love films. I'm not a film expert. I'm not a film noir expert. Although now I've been just watching film noirs left and right. I'm basically a journalist, you know, and I come from journalism and telling true stories. And it was Tierney's story that really got me. And then along the way, I found these films. You know, I found after he was basically banished from the mainstream in Hollywood, he did some independent films. One of them was called Female Jungle. It went through a number of incarnations before it became Female Jungle. I found that out. And it was Jane Mansfield's first film.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't able to release it for a few years until she appeared on Broadway and became a star, and they managed to get it released. But in that film, he plays a cop who gets so drunk that when he wakes up the next morning, there's a murder and he can't remember if he did the murder or not. So I was like, oh, that's very, very Tierney-esque. That was the one. There's a lot of little small films that are out there.
Yeah, I was planning to see that soon because I hadn't heard of it. But one film that I was really impressed with him was The Hoodlum. I thought he was incredible in that. That scene with him and his mother towards the end where she tears into him and calls him garbage. And you see how it's breaking his heart. His mother is, I mean, that was a powerful, powerful scene. That I hadn't heard of it until I read the book. I really like that one.
And that's a film that also kind of brings out the pressures that Tierney was under when it came to his family. You know, Tierney was established in Hollywood, and his younger brother, Gerard, got out of the Navy, came to Hollywood. And while Tierney was making Born to Kill, Gerard came and visited the set and got a screen test and became an actor on his own. Well, of course, as people said, you know, you've got to change your name from Tierney, we think, because it's not really, you know, Lawrence doesn't have that great reputation. So he became the actor Scott Brady. And Scott Brady had a great career. It culminated at the end. He was in the movie The China Syndrome, and he played the old corrupt sheriff in Gremlins. But he did lots of stuff through the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. But The Hoodlum featured Tierney's youngest brother, Edward Tierney, And Lawrence got him the job because he came to Hollywood. I think he was fought in Korea, came out of that war. When he got to Hollywood, Lawrence got him a job in the film there.
Right.
Ed Tierney wasn't as into being an actor, stick with it as much as the other two did.
Right. I wanted to touch on his family a little bit because something that you pointed out was that he had a daughter and his younger brother brought the daughter up and then married the woman who Tierney got pregnant, which is you know quite a wild story. But there was something that you mentioned in the book that he said, you know, hey, if I just had a family to go home to, maybe I wouldn't be going to these bars so much. So was there any suggestion or anything to indicate why that relationship with that woman didn't work out, or were his troubles just far too deep to have a family?
I think that his troubles were deep when he found out that this woman was pregnant. It was like, whoops, you know, you're on your own. I don't think he could handle that. I don't think he could handle the pressures of running a family by that point in his life. I mean, we talk about, you know, the beatings that he took. I thinking later that there was a chance he may have, you know, had CTE like these football players have.
Right.
You know, when he was older, a lot of the guys told me that he'd go up to women and say, you know, rub my head, you know, and massage his head. And they all thought that was a harmful guy. Why not do that? But I interviewed a woman with whom Tierney lived. He lived with her family when he showed up in New York back in the 50s. And when she was a teenager and he would say, can you rub my head? I got these really bad headaches. And she, as a teenager, said, well, he's probably got them because of the drinking and all the beatings that he takes.
You know, yeah.
A lot of billy clubs and boots to the head by cops in the 50s.
Oh, God. Yes. Yes. I mean, like I said, you know, I'd either be laughing at some of these fights or some of them were just really scary, particularly the ones with the police officers, two on one. And, you know, again, you look at the back of the book and the photos show the damage. One thing I always ask writers who write biographies is kind of a funny question, but when you are researching a guy like Tierney and talking to all these people he knew and his family, does he ever come to you in your dreams or anything? Or do you ever feel his presence sending you any messages?
Well, you can't help that, really. You can't really help but feel that as you're writing a book like that and getting so deep into it, because you know, you start feeling a bit of a responsibility for the person. You know, there's some stories that can't be confirmed and you don't want to print those. I mean, that there was the legend that he was involved in a car crash in Spain sometime in the 1960s. He borrowed a car from Steve Reeves, who was known as Hercules, crashed the car, killed a hooker, went to jail for 4 years. I heard this from so many people and I had to say, look, I'm really sorry, but again, I've done this month, week to week, you know, scan of this guy's life. There never was a 4 year period where he was off the radar, maybe a year, maybe 6 months. And if he had been arrested for manslaughter or murder with a prostitute in Spain, the news definitely would have gotten over to the States. It would have made a big deal. But still, people that I spoke to then say, nah, we think something did happen. I spoke to Steve Reeves' biographer, and who was a friend of his, and he said, no, he never mentioned Lawrence Tierney ever, but maybe Steve Reeves was keeping it secret. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, then there's also that story about the woman who he was with who jumped out the window and died. And then there was a possibility there that a pimp did it, and then Tierney went and either killed this pimp or some beat him up or got his justice, as he put it. I mean, that's quite crazy. I mean, oh my God, how did he get into these situations?
And at this point, you know, I think he was in his mid 50s, and he was getting a few roles here and there. He was living in New York City. It was 1975. He was living in New York City and I believe working construction. No, he was working as a hansom cab driver at the time. Mm-hmm. And this old guy is in an apartment with a 24-year-old woman in a nightgown. They're drinking. And as far as he tells, she just says, I'm going to go out the window, and went out the window.
Right.
Now, what really happened? I mean, everyone I speak to, and you know, he was never charged. The police, you know, believed his story. There was no evidence that he threw her out the window. But these stories have come out. And Tierney was always I've spoken to a lot of people who broached the subject with him. And he was always very skittish about saying exactly what happened. But you know, basically to him, it was a tragedy. He knew the girl, he loved her. And there is that possibility of something happening and he got the justice.
Right. Well, that, what was even scarier about that was that I know you pointed this out in the book, is that there was a similar scene in The Hoodlum where the woman that he gets pregnant jumps off the roof, his sister-in-law. And yeah. I thought, wow, you know, art imitating life and vice versa. Do you have a favorite Tierney story? I know some people asked you that, but is there a favorite story or two of from the book? Or is it hard to nail down?
there are so many. The one story that strikes me is because I pass the place a lot, because I live where I live, is the incident at St. Monica's Church. This is the church that was this inspiration for the movie Going My Way with Barry Fitzgerald and Bing Crosby. They played priests. This church in Santa Monica, I think it was around 1951, police are called there. There is a barefoot, as they called in the time, a bum hanging around outside the church. When police arrive, the bum runs into the church and tries to take sanctuary at the altar. Well, it's Lawrence Tierney, and it's an alcoholic breakdown. He's gone, right. You know, mentally ill, as far as people think. And the police want to arrest him, and he's saying, "I have sanctuary. You can't arrest me." And the cops don't know, so they go to the priest and say, "People really have sanctuary in a church where we can't arrest them?" And they're like, "No, you get him out of here, please. We have morning mass." And they had to get some makeshift they made a makeshift straitjacket, brought him into the police station. It was very sad. He was screaming that they're out to kill me, like they killed Robert Walker. That Robert Walker, the actor, had died just recently. His doctor had given him a fatal dose accidentally. I think in hopes of helping his alcoholism. So Tierney is sent to a sanitarium. He's sent to a mental institution or a mental hospital, and the critics, the gossips, write him off. What a sad ending. We knew this was going to happen. We're never going to hear from Tierney again. Thank God he didn't kill someone else. Let's close the book on the story of Lawrence Tierney and move on.
Right.
3 weeks later, there's a barefoot guy in a bar wanting to whip anybody in the house. It's Lawrence Tierney. He's arrested again. He wasn't charged for the church incident. This time he's charged. He's dragged in front of the judge. It's his 13th arrest. And the judge says, "Mr. Tierney, if you promise not to drink again,
oh my God.
On probation." And the story continues. And so there you go. I mean, there are so many of them. There's the Battle of Decker's Lawn. There's the Battle of Weehawken. There's the Battle of 6th Avenue and 53rd Street. They're all battles that Tierney, you know, was involved in. But there is one thing that someone mentioned to me, and I like to mention this, is that there's a lot of stories of Tierney breaking down doors of women's apartments in search of someone. Tierney beat up a lot of men, but he never laid hands on a woman. And that was thing about Tierney.
Yeah.
There was a reason why he was able to, you know, romance and was faced by women like Gloria Vanderbilt and socialites and actors like Shelley Winters, because he was very charming. He could speak several languages. He was very intelligent. He could recite Shakespeare and poetry. And he was a very sensitive guy. And he did treat women with great respect. There was a woman named Julie Davis, who she's a director. She met Tierney very early in her career. She saw him at Cantor's Delicatessen, a place in Hollywood where a lot of showbiz people hang out. And she recognized him and went over to him and said, "Lawrence Tierney, I love you." And he's like, "Oh, you saw me in Reservoir Dogs?" And she's like, "No, in Born to Kill. I loved you in Born to Kill. I'm making a short film. Would you be in it?" And he's like, "Sure, here's my number." And he actually appeared in her short film.
And that's amazing that he would do that.
And she said, "It's amazing that he would do that." And he was so nice and so avuncular. And she said, "Thank God I didn't run into Harvey Weinstein."
Yeah, God. Thank God. Thank God for that. I couldn't help but wonder, you know, because, you know, the press made such a mockery out of his problems and, you know, felt, you know, just would say he was weak and things like that. Obviously, people didn't understand the depths of alcoholism as much back then, but I couldn't help but wonder. I was curious your opinion. I wonder if that would really be treated any differently now. Do you think the press, you know, these stories would still be similar in the way they were reported today?
No, Hollywood was smaller then. You know, the world was smaller then. The media was more concentrated then. We've had people like that, you know, the Andy Dix. I mean, remember Sean Penn used to get in a lot of trouble. Johnny Depp got in trouble. Kanye West, You talk about people who are off their meds.
Yes.
You know, would it be treated the same? It probably wouldn't be treated the same because his problems would probably have been treated. He probably would have been on some sort of medication, or they would have dealt with his issues much differently than they did in the 1940s and 50s, which was basically, you know, if he was stronger, he'd be able, if he just wasn't such a weak person, he'd be able to stop drinking. And then he'd say, I can't do it. I try. And so, you know, it was a sad story, but again, as I said, somewhat heroic in the fact that he did keep going, and he managed, you know, he wreaked havoc on his family. That was why, you know, his nephew, who was Ed Tierney's son, Tim Tierney, helped me a lot, gave me that side of the story. When I talked to people who knew Tierney when they were younger, it was, wow, Larry, wow, he was the great guy from the old days. Tim told me the other side of the story, the damage that he did to the family. And that helped create a more rounded picture of the man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's so odd that these judges would just say, oh, if you promise not to drink again, then, you know, we'll put you on probation. I mean, because AA was around then. So you would think that at least the justice system would have some kind of understanding that it's not going to be that simple. I mean, that's very bizarre to me that they would just keep putting a Band-Aid on his problems like that. But do you think even on the justice side, they were ignorant?
Oh, most definitely. The press, there'll be articles going, we can't believe it. We thought this was the end for Tierney. The judge just let him off again. And at the time, I think it's controversial, but I think that, you know, AA let him down in a way because, you know, and he proselytized for AA to the end. When he was an old man living on near the Venice boardwalk, he'd go up to poor down and out guys and lead them to the AA meeting. You know, he really cared for the down and out. But in the 40s and 50s, or in the 50s when he was part of AA, and he had been sentenced to AA a couple of times, the idea that, first of all, it was, you know, a moral failing that led to the alcoholism, and that total abstinence was what was required. When he would slip, he'd go, I'm a loser, I slipped, and then he would just go on a binge. And so, you know, the AA kind of led him to that. You know, many times when he was in jail a couple of times, he'd get out and he was going to go on speaking tours for Alcoholics Anonymous around the country. That's how much he believed in it and tried it. He tried it many times. He never went on speaking tours, but he was always an advertisement for it. He was probably the most non-anonymous member of Alcoholics Anonymous of the 1950s. Everybody knew he was part of it.
right. Well, I'm like I said, it's such a great read. I absolutely loved it, and I understand that your next biography is on Marlon Brando. Is that what you're working on now?
Well, it's not a biography. There's been enough biographies of Marlon Brando out there.
True.
One was about 900 pages that I think my laptop is sitting on right now. But it's a look at Brando's influence. It'll be out in 2024, which would be his 100th birthday and 20 years since his passing, about his continued influence on popular culture through all these years. And so it's a different kind of book, not a biography, but just as action-packed, I hope.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And just thinking about Brando, I mean, Brando and Tierney, those two would have been a great pair in a film.
Right, exactly. And again, Tierney stepped in for Brando in Streetcar Named Desire in New Mexico. He got great reviews
I would have loved to have seen that
on Wednesday night. He didn't make it to the show on Thursday night because he went to the bar in town in Albuquerque and Santa Fe and did not return.
Well, whoever saw that show was very lucky, I'm sure, because I would have loved to have seen him as Stanley Kowalski. Yeah. But again, it's out now. Lawrence Tierney, Hollywood's real life tough guy. What a great, I suppose you could pretty much get this anywhere. On Amazon anywhere.
Here it is. Here it's in hardcover.
Yeah, hardcover, softcover.
We go to if you go to lawrencetierneybook.com, there's lots of links. You know, it's on Amazon, and the books, signed copies are available at larryedmonds.com. Larry Edmonds Bookshop is on Hollywood Boulevard. I was over there last week. It's been there since the 1910s, I think. And Tierney used to stand on the sidewalk outside the place and direct people in and saying, hey, this is a good bookstore, get in here. And people were so intimidated, they would go into the bookstore and buy something. So everybody knew Lawrence Tierney in Hollywood.
Fantastic. Well, again, for those of you watching, I highly, highly recommend getting this book. Christmas is around the corner, so it's out now. So go get it. It's a great read. Where's the best place for people to follow you on social media, Bert?
Wow. Where am I? I'm all over the place. Well, there's lawrencetierneybook.com on Instagram, Tough Guy Tierney on Twitter, Bert Kearns on Instagram, Tabloid Baby on Twitter. And just look up, Google me.
Great.
I'm out there. I'm always somewhere.
I'll leave the links in the description box below for where you can follow Bert on his career and what he has next. But again, fantastic book. So go get it. And Bert, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come out and talk to me today. It was a real pleasure.
Oh, it's great. Thanks for having me. We'll do it again one day.
Yeah, please come again when you're on the Brando book. I'd love to read that. So hope to have you back.
Thanks so much. Take care.
I just want to thank Mary and Dorothy for putting me in touch with Bert today and scheduling Bert on my show. Marion is the publicist at University Press of Kentucky. So Marion, thanks so much. And thank you everyone for watching and or listening. If you are currently listening to this on the audio version of my YouTube channel and you've run out of episodes to listen to, head over to the YouTube channel where every single episode that I have ever recorded can be found. Go to youtube.com/Robert Bellissimo at the movies. I also want to thank all of my members on Patreon. If you're interested in becoming a member of my Patreon, head over to the link patreon.com/Robert Bellissimo at the movies for full details. And lastly, if this is your first time here, please consider subscribing to my YouTube channel by pressing the Robert Bellissimo at the movies logo. You will see it floating above my head in the top left corner to your top left in just a second. Just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release one of my new episodes or when I go live. Thank you so much, everyone. I will see you in the next episode.